for my parents, to whom I owe everything. Chapter 1. The Lie of the Land. About 3,200 years ago, more than a millennium before Caesar's crossing of the Rubicon and the beginnings of the Roman Empire, more than 6 centuries before the birth of either Plato or Confucius, a lucky servant named Munabitu received a gift of land from Meli Shipak II, one of the Kassite kings who reigned in ancient Babylon. We know quite a few things about Munabitu and his patch of earth. We know that he owned several hundred acres, a little more than a square mile. The parcel would have made him moderately rich, but not immensely so. We know that the land was on the banks of a canal in a place called Hudadu, possibly an ancient name for Baghdad. We know the name of some of Munabitu's neighbours too, because he faced a legal challenge over the ownership of his plot, and we know that the decision eventually fell in Munabitu's favour. We know the names of the officials who adjudicated the disagreement, and we know the names of the bureaucrats who trekked from the royal palace of Marduk Apla Edina I, the son of Meli Shipak II, to confirm the size of the estate. We know more with some degree of certainty about Munabitu, a Babylonian servant who lived in the dying days of the Bronze Age, who was otherwise a historical nobody, than we do about many of the kings, warriors, scholars, and prophets who were born during the centuries and millennia that followed. We know about Munabitu specifically and solely because of the land he possessed, the ownership and saga of which is carved into a piece of smooth black limestone around 0.5 meter long. The stone was recovered from Susa in Iran by archaeologists in the early 20th century. Known as a kuduru, the stone was the centrally held record of the servant's land ownership. Munabitu likely would have had a replica of his own to prove possession to any subsequent doubters. The fact that Munabitu's story was recorded in such a permanent manner and survived for thousands of years, even as so much other knowledge was lost, is not some fluke of history. Munabitu's wealth was carved indelibly into solid stone for a good reason. For many early civilizations, land was power. Governments collected taxes in the form of grain, for which records of ownership were of the utmost importance. Without knowing who owned each segment of earth, it was impossible to know who owed what to the tax collectors. For the very earliest agricultural economies, the way in which land was owned, organized, and used was one of the foremost priorities of state building, which made the difference between economic survival and total collapse. Across the range of ancient languages, among different civilizations spread thousands of miles around the world, some of the very earliest surviving records are those that delineate land ownership. In India, flat copper plates recorded grants of land from local rulers, often to religious establishments, from as early as the 3rd and 4th centuries BC. In Egypt, tombs that were built and sealed more than 4,000 years ago are inscribed with the details of the lives of the men buried within, including descriptions of the land that they owned. Before the existence of investment funds, pensions, stocks, bonds, or international currency markets, even before human history was recorded in any meaningful way, land was the original asset. The ability to own and control territory was the first means of turning power into wealth. Munabitu would presumably find a lot of things about the modern world very confusing, but there are elements that might seem familiar to him. After centuries of gargantuan social and economic change, land is still at the center of our world. Owning it still confers social status and financial security. It is still the asset that governs the course of our lives, our successes and failures, more than any other form of wealth. Today, land remains the world's largest single asset by some margin and a prized possession to its owners. One estimate by the McKinsey Global Institute pins the total value of land at about 35% of the $520 trillion in real wealth on Earth, a category that includes all of the physical and intangible assets in the world, from buildings to intellectual property. The total sum of the machinery, infrastructure, and equipment across the planet makes up another 17%, while commercial property and residential housing, the actual structures on top of the land, are worth another 11% and 21% apiece. That makes the market in land about twice as valuable as all of the listed companies on every stock exchange in the world. While those publicly traded securities are monitored, second by second, by a global army of investors and a breathless financial media, land is relegated to a second-order asset.